I know. Oh, Heather, I forgot to ask you, can we swear on your podcast?
Welcome to the Chickmunks Podcast, where we explore the spiritual path of contemplative Christianity with a female voice and perspective. Hello, and welcome back, Chickmunks. I'm your host, Heather Lawrence. Remember me? Maybe not. I did just realize that I have not once introduced myself to you, my dear, dear listeners, because I actually forget that people listen to this who aren't my friends yet, or my mom or my mom's friends. So thank you for hanging around during these long, unannounced, unplanned hiatuses from this podcast. To be honest, I'm in the process of discerning how I can work recording and editing this into the rhythms of my life as it stands now, because things are always changing. But I assure you this, there is no lack of fascinating people and interesting ideas in my life, and I want very, very badly to share them with you. So if you have ideas or suggestions or any feedback, I'm really always grateful to hear from you. Speaking of which, thank you to all of you who have reached out during these pauses to encourage the momentum of this podcast in big and small ways. I hear you, I love you, and I am so grateful for you. Okay, on to today's joy bomb of a conversation. The Reverend Hannah Wilder joined me a few weeks ago, and I know that you're going to love her. Hannah is ordained in the Episcopal Church, and among her many roles in the Diocese of San Diego, she's a curate at St. Mark's City Heights, beginning her ministry there in a formal capacity as a priest. Hannah is a passionate leader and thinker in the work of reconciliation and inclusion, and man, you should hear her preach about justice. We are so lucky to have her as a priest in this denomination. So Hannah and I jumped right into a conversation immediately on the call because she's one of my dearest friends, and we got to conversational gold before I even hit record. In this short time together, we talk about death and dying, racism, patriarchy, and what the hell we do with our feelings, which, just in case it isn't obvious enough already, does involve a lot of swearing. Consider yourself warned. So I hope you enjoy the abrupt beginning, this pure joy of friendship, the multitude of F-bombs, the invitation to examine your beliefs, and the chance to offer yourself some grace and some compassion and good old-fashioned self-love. I speak for us both when I say we love you and we would love to hear from you if you have anything to share in response to this conversation. So, take a deep breath in, let it go, and here we go. I think the thing about it for me is, like, I used to tell myself the story that I am not good at organizing, I'm not good at details, I'm not good at structure, because that's just something that I know about my personality, according to literally any personality assessment, like Myers-Briggs, Enneagram, anything that I take, the DISC. It's just like, you're really good at people and having fun and enjoying life and thinking about big things. And don't even try to think about details because you're going to go crazy if you do.
Totally.
And I know this about myself. And I think I used to tell our church administrator all the time, if I had her job, I would blow up the building. Not on purpose. But maybe also on purpose, because the fifth time trying to print a single page damn color flyer and it didn't work, I was like, I will never do this. And now I'm an administrator. And I'm learning that I actually can do it and I can find joy in it. And part of, I think, why I've never felt confident about it before is because I didn't have enough experience to know how things run well, you know? I'm not someone who intuitively can structure things well just by imagining it. But because I've lived so many ministry experiences and I know the flow of things now, I think I actually can bring some order into chaos in that way. So,
absolutely. There's a lot to be said for just living a few more years of life and getting a little bit more experience.
Right. It's so true.
Yeah. I experience you as pretty organized and structured, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's my Capricorn Maybe that's rising, just... man.
Maybe.
Really a joke, though.
Like, you remembered that this thing was happening today. Remember that we already had a podcast date and I totally different didn't?
Oh,
and
yeah.
You remembered what date you were preaching and I'm announcing it to the congregation and you're like, no, I'm not preaching this. So I think you're actually pretty good at structure.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe this is just a like negative self-concept that it's time to get rid of.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just also, I think structure is kind of boring and people like me when I'm fun. And so I don't like to be the person. Well, also, this is another thing I'm learning. I don't like to be the person who like always has a plan and everyone mm-hmm. else has to cater to me.
Totally.
You know? But that I've realized a lot of times nobody else has a plan. And it's actually for the good of whoever I'm talking to and whoever I'm working with. If I just say what I think, because actually a lot of times people will gladly defer to it because they don't have an idea of what should happen. And I usually do know what should happen.
Yeah, that's awesome to realize.
Right?
My wife is a total planner and it's great, but I know it means that I'm just more relaxed about it. But she says that she needs me because I bring spontaneity to her life. So I like living into that. It's a nice balance.
Yeah.
But
does feel like good balance.
If anything happened to her, God forbid, I'd be fucked. You
How
know?
Long have y'all been married again?
We've been married 10 years last November.
Yeah, that'd definitely fuck you over.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
a,
totally.
It's a long time to build that identity together.
Yeah, so I make sure she goes to the doctor and, you
That's
know.
Right. You got to take care of that woman. Keep her around. That's an investment right there.
I know. Oh, Heather, I forgot to ask you, can we swear on your podcast?
Oh, yeah. I just put a little E next to it. I think that will actually be the little blurb I use for the intro of this, this conversation.
Explicit
Did ever
content.
Happened to her? You fucked. I wish this were a video podcast so people could see you putting on bright red lipstick right
yeah,
now.
I just feel like I want to be a little sexy, you know?
Yeah, me too. I haven't washed my hair in 7 days.
Really?
Oh, like always.
You always have the raddest looking hair.
It is so insane right now.
Insanely hot. That's what you mean to say.
What if I have to post this episode as a video?
Yeah, you might have to.
I honestly might. Well, we didn't really set a topic for conversation, and I feel great about that because
we're so good at structure and planning.
Again, it's just an illusion.
Yes.
I will say also every single boss that I've ever had has tried to put me on some like spreadsheet duty or like organize something. And I have always looked at them and said, I will do this, but you need to know it will take me 3 times as long as it will take someone with the actual skills to do this. And I will be really angry the whole time, but I will do it because you asked me to. And then they're like, wow, you really don't give off that impression. Like I kind of thought you had your shit together. I'm like, yeah, I do a lot of work to make you think that I have my shit together. That is where the majority of my ego effort goes.
I love that idea of working to our strengths, you know, like the strengths finder and everything. Like,
yeah,
we all just have strengths. Let's just like not fight the flow. You
right.
Know?
Right. I know. I think I've been kind of like sitting with this body language for a while now, just because I think it's the best description of what we do together as humans. The metaphor of the body that good old Paul that I'm, you know, we're working on our relationship.
Yes.
And he instilled this body metaphor in me from a very young age. And I actually think that's one of the things that fundamentalism couldn't make toxic in a way, because
Oh.
it's very necessarily diverse. The
That's
body
true.
has to have many different parts, and I think a lot of the parts function totally independently by probably their, like, does a finger cell really know anything about a kidney? They don't seem to interact with each other. They don't seem to necessarily need each other. They probably don't even communicate with each other. But without one or the other, the rest of the body suffers. And so the work of the other one's going to be harder.
Yeah, that's true. And it is hard to fuck that up, if you will. I
Yeah, I
mean,
will. I sure will.
because I just think that's such a good opening to talk about our cultural moment and, the death of George Floyd and the sort of collective consciousness raising about racism in our lives. And, I don't know how to get through to people that Black Lives Matter, and that we all need to speak up and work harder. And I think that as a white person, we As what I'll speak for myself, like I don't always see the injustice in the systems, banking, education, housing, healthcare. I don't see those injustices. And I might, if I'm honest, actually say, like, it's kind of scary to me to think of seeing those injustices and then working to change them when it's worked so well for me my whole life, But that just means I have to do that much more consciousness raising and effort.
Well, and that a level of honesty that you just expressed is really difficult for most people to get to, I think, because I think that's the resistance to that idea anyway, is like, in order to acknowledge privilege and biased systems, we have to acknowledge where it's worked for us
Yes.
and that it's going to cost something to dismantle that.
Yes. Yes. We have to acknowledge that it's going to cost something. And yet, Heather, I honestly believe that it will cost more to not dismantle
That's
it.
right. Totally right.
You know?
Yeah. Because the system, if it's toxic, and even if it seems like it's working for us, it's working in a toxic way.
Right. It's not really truly deeply. Spiritually, mystically, even tangibly, physically working for us. I feel like this year has been so eye-opening. I've done the Sacred Ground curriculum through the Episcopal Church. It's a film and readings-based dialogue in small groups, and it's really opened my eyes to all the holes in our education system and just how so much of racism is hidden from white people. Like, we're really good at hiding it from ourselves. And it's also like a been a wonderful safe space to for white people to talk to other white people about some of our misconceptions or, all that we're learning or the white guilt that we feel that we don't need to express in diverse circles, like it's good to express it and like go see a therapist, but not to like make yourself the center of attention in a circle of people of color.
That's an
So
important distinction. I'm glad you said that.
yeah, I mean, I think we all need to process like this intense stuff, and it is there's a lot to feel guilt or shame or sadness or grief or loss over, and yet it's not appropriate to do it in a venue where people of color have the mic, or are trying are being leaders,
Yeah, because I think what I hear you expressing is there is a collective grief and a crying out for justice from those who have been oppressed by these systems, from those who have been marginalized by these systems, from those whose voice and ability to express has been taken away by these systems. And so for those of us who have always been able to express ourselves freely for the most part, to continue to express in those environments while they're finally being heard, for us to redirect attention back to ourselves and our experience of it, is the thing that halts the momentum almost, right? Like there should be an uprising and a crying out for justice and grief. And we can allow that and participate in that and mourn with. And then our grief for our own experience can be better expressed somewhere else.
Absolutely. I think that's really beautifully said. And I think we have to start talking about it as white people, but more than just talk about it, we've got to live it. We've got to really make changes. And I don't know what the answers are, you know, to some of the big questions like reparations and whatnot, but we have to start talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
And I would really like to be more able to hear the anger of people of color, hear it and not take personal offense, you know, but to be...
That's right.
Like someone... I wish, I hope that someday I could be like part of a healing process for someone, you know?
Yeah. And I want you to speak more about that because I'm relating from my experience, how healing it's been to have, God, I can think of this one conference I went to and I opened up to a group of people. This was right when I started to get comfortable with the idea that I might still be a Christian after I'd kind of taken apart my fundamentalist faith. And it was actually a really charismatic gathering of people, but they were all Southern Christian, mostly men who were pastors. And I was having this experience, actually a psychosomatic experience of like a constricting around my throat. And someone was doing healing prayer and they called it out from up front. They were like, someone in here is having a battle with their throat and they like use their voice for their profession. Like it's a big part of who they are. Their voice. Is there someone that applies?
What?
And like has had this problem for a while. And I've had vocal surgery before. Like this is the point of spiritual battle for me. If there is one in my body, that's a big one.
Wow.
And I totally believe in that stuff. And I also know there are a lot of people who don't, and I don't care. I'm not here to evangelize, but
yeah, it doesn't
but
matter.
This is real for me. And so, you know, once I raise my hand, I'm like, you're talking about me. This has never happened to me before. And I don't even know if I'm a Christian. And they ask for a few people, volunteers to pray with me over this. And one of them was a man, and he asked like what this was about, if I had an awareness of what it was about. And I told him a little bit of my story. You know, I'm just starting to step into my role as a minister again and kind of discerning what that means for me, because I came from a context where as a woman, that wasn't allowed. And he asked a few more questions, but he looked at me and he said, I wonder if you'll let me do this as a man, stand in front of you and on behalf of all of these men ask for forgiveness. I wonder if you'll let me do that and tell you I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
And he just stood there and he said, you don't have to say anything, but I just wonder if you'll let me stand in the gap. And of course I just stood there and wept while people continued to pray for me and like prayed for forgiveness and healing and restoration and reconciliation. And I'm like, well, that's the damn work. Like if that's not the body of Christ, I don't know what is.
Yeah. That's amazing, Heather.
Yeah. What yeah. And so anyway, I hear you saying, I want to be that person. I want to stand in the gap. I want to be the white person who can say to people of color, people who have been marginalized unnecessarily, like, I can handle it. Whatever it is you have to say, I can handle it. Just give it to me, because I want you to release it. I want you to be free from that. And I want to be free from that. So let's just let it go.
Oh, that's so beautiful. I would be so honored to be that person. And I just think, what a beautiful man soul that was. I don't even care what gender he is, but, you know, like to have done that for you. Yeah. That's so, I can see how that would be so profoundly healing.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever experienced anything like that? I know you've been through your own process of what is and is not my version of Christianity.
Yes, I can think of a number of experiences where I've found healing in the very place that I've also been hurt. Like for me, the church has inflicted many wounds, you know, just messages of women not being allowed to speak in church or teach in church or just being less than in some way. And then also experiencing, for me, the Episcopal Church and women chanting the Eucharist and preaching and teaching and being total badasses. And in my sexual life, I was date raped when I was 18. That was the first time I had sex. I was saving myself for marriage, you know? And yeah, it was a horrible, horrible, violating experience. And then my son's father, who I met just a little while after that experience, he wrote me this poem once that I'll never forget. And it said, "Whoever told you that your body and sex and sexuality are wrong, they are either lying to you or it's delusional." And it was so powerful for me, having grown up in the church with all of this toxic Christian baggage about sex and our bodies, and especially the female body. It was deeply healing to have a man affirm the goodness of, and the sacramentality and the sacredness of sex and our bodies. And that was deeply healing, you know?
I can imagine when I was in a certain phase, I probably would have fought him. So it's beautiful that you could receive that, that you were ready for that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was such an asshole for Jesus for a while. I would have been like, no, here are all the Bible verses that say you're wrong.
Yeah, totally. I've been there too.
Yeah.
But I do think it's true. You know, I think God made us and God made our sexuality. And I, for so long, felt afraid of that. And I am a very healthy, you know, lively, energetic sexual being. And I think God is too. I think that's where it comes from. We're made in the image of God, you know?
Yeah. God as relationship is my jam. Let's
really?
Get into some process theology.
Yes.
That's like, I mean, I think that's fundamentally what it means when we say God is Trinity, three in one. It's this divine flow of love.
I agree. And I love the idea that there's just an abundance of love so much that it's overflowing into three beings at least.
Yes. And then outward into creation. And we are in this. This is all that there is.
Yes.
Oh, God, I want to throw some stuff.
Throw some stuff.
Just flashing back to Sunday when you said, "We are shroom people," from the pulpit. So for the listeners, one of the greatest gifts in my life right now is that this mutual admiration society you're experiencing between me and Hannah is like, is my work life right now.
Yes.
Because we get to lead worship and plan worship together. I'm just elated that this is what I get to do, to use my gifts and like, and serve and be with people that I fucking love. Like,
yes, me too. Oh, me so too.
It's just,
Heather, I think you're amazing. And if people don't know you, I just want to say you are beautiful. You're intelligent. You're so gifted musically. You're kind. You are just awesome. And I learned so much from you. And I'm so glad that our paths have crossed.
And single.
Kidding.
Not kidding.
Yeah. And she thinks she's straight. But all you lesbians out there listening, let me just say.
Okay.
Heather is awesome and could be turned. You got to really apply yourselves, though, I think.
Really? Yeah. And I wish there was like a way to say, you know, pursue hard with Heather and then she'll love you. It's just certainly not always true. But I do want to say that I wrote down heading into this interview, what are some of my favorite things I've heard you casually say in conversation?
Oh, shit.
We've already hit two of them.
Oh, good.
Which is the
shroom people.
And how straight are you exactly?
Yeah, we want to just narrow this down. Exactly how straight are you? Like on the Kinsey scale, right?
It was so good. Oh, man. Another one of them, though, we have not talked about that I love that I've heard you say is I love poor people. And maybe that's not even the best way to say it, but I've heard you talk about how your favorite part of your ministry and your work is how much you enjoy the conversations with people who are living on the margins of society. And I would love to hear you talk more about that.
Oh, thank you. That's an awesome question. And just thanks for inviting me. I feel so honored to be here. And I love your podcast. The Chickmunks is awesome. I feel so drawn to working with people who are marginalized and oppressed. And when I was ordained just about a year ago as an Episcopal priest, I had a few job offers, and you know, some of them were at wealthy white churches in the suburbs, and I turned them down because I wanted to work in City Heights, which is the most diverse part of San Diego, and a lot of refugees and immigrants and undocumented people live in City Heights, and that is just where I feel alive and I feel God calling me. And I don't mean to say that God doesn't love rich people or that I don't love rich people.
Sure.
You know?
Not exclusive. Just
yeah. I do just feel like the people that Jesus hung out with are the people that come to our St. Mark's food pantry. You know, the people that don't have anywhere else to go for food and maybe don't have a cell phone or a roof over their head. And that not only are those the people that Jesus hung out with, but those are the people who bring Jesus to me,
right?
You know?
Yeah. How?
I have conversations with people where I'll check in about, you know, their spiritual life, you know? And this one guy in particular, a couple of weeks ago, he looked at me like I was a little crazy because I said, you know, how's your spiritual life? How's your life with God? And he was like, that's great. I was like, really? Oh, tell me about that. And he's like, me and God, you know, we are tight. I talk to God every day, all day. He's like, I have nothing else, you know? And that is so true in the words that he's speaking to me. And it does something to me. It brings the immediacy of God to my heart, which is, you know, living my very tidy suburban life, that feels like I can depend on all these things that aren't really real when God is real and the only thing probably that's real.
Mm. That's right. Yeah, we insulate our lives with all these things that are supposed to be convenient and comfortable, and then all of a sudden we're completely disconnected from what matters.
Right. 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 And we spend so much time worrying about the wrong things, I think.
Mm.
What's your experience working with people on the margins, Heather?
To be totally honest, it hasn't been historically a huge part of my life. When I was a church planter, I started to really feel the lack of that. Probably because I was calling myself a pastor and wasn't spending time with people who were outside of my socioeconomic bracket. And I felt, you know, we were aiming to be a downtown Asheville church, and there's an enormous homeless population as far as like a ratio goes. And we didn't have any involvement with them. So I started to look up ways to be involved, and I found this third party organization called Asheville Poverty Initiative, which was run by a woman who was a United Methodist pastor. And man, this was actually really good timing for me because I was on my last leg of evangelicalism, and I met her and she had started this, and we got lunch and she told me about Asheville Poverty Initiative and why she started it, which was essentially to bridge the gap between faith communities and the poverty community. And she said the emphasis really was to have a third party so that they could remove the directional flow of like haves serving have nots, because awesome. It's so dehumanizing. And she really maintained a paradigm of dignity for everyone involved that I thought was so powerful. And this, of course, is a lesbian woman who has been through her own persecution by the church, and she was partnered with kids. Like, I know that there's a lot of history there, and she She knew who I was working with too. She knew we were Southern Baptist, and she told me, if you need to keep this from other people so that they're still open to working with us, that's totally fine. This isn't an agenda for me. I don't need to be out everywhere. It's okay. Which I respected so much. I was like, God, that's powerful. Yeah. But anyway, we worked with her, with them and that organization. And one of the most powerful things was taking, she hired people from within the homeless community to give poverty walks. So it's basically a tour of downtown Asheville from their perspective, like where they live, where they, you know, introduce us to your friends, whatever. And so she would hire them to give a tour. And
so cool.
Yeah, we got a group of, I think my small group did it together and learned so much. And I think that is like a really, really beautiful, almost grassroots sort of model for bridging those communities, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I wish that we could have a City Heights Poverty Initiative here.
I'm sure you could. Probably just add that to your plate.
Yeah, why not? So you started out in the more Southern Baptist tradition.
Yeah, what about you?
And then you... Well, I
was
baptized
doing.
Episcopalian. I want to know more about your story. I was baptized Episcopalian, and then my parents moved us over to a congregational church when I was in middle school. They found a church that they liked and that had a good youth group, and that was the church that I really was formed in, I would say more so than the Episcopal church. Because it was like those formative middle school, high school years, you know?
Right.
And that's when you're starting to have conversations about sex and life and career and identity and, you know, all those things. So I got a real conservative shot of the Bible and scripture and Jesus and tradition. So, you know, that was all very fun and exciting to work through in my 20s and 30s and still.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah.
It's like you think that you've uprooted it all the way, and then something touches a little root that was left there, and you're like, damn it, where are my tweezers?
yeah, shit keeps coming up or coming back. It's amazing.
Do you find that you respond differently to it now, like when you rediscover those things in yourself? Is it a different experience?
Oh, yeah. I think that the fact that I'm ordained in a church is like, it gives me a real sense of like that melting of the chip off my shoulder. It's like I went through this process that was like 10 years long, you know, and I had so many people at every step of the way affirming that they also saw this call in my life. And, you know, it's just, I don't really have anything to be, to prove anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I am living this life that I feel like I've been called to, and that people have supported me all along the way. And it's like, I do feel so happy though about your podcast, seriously, because I think that it's so important to talk about these issues as women in the church, you know, to talk about our experiences and to tell people you can get through. If you're somebody in a difficult situation in a church and you're feeling that, you know, God or the person of Jesus is calling you to a different way of being that's more whole for you, yes, like go after that. That, yeah. Follow that. That is real and true. And that's the path that I've taken and the Heather that I think you've taken. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to encourage people in that today.
Yeah. Well, what else would you say to encourage that woman?
Well, I wish that I could talk to her and that, you know, I have like a list of books that I would want to read with her and like, podcasts to listen to and like scripture to delve into with her and, you know, just to be a support and to be hopefully like a witness to what can be. I want to say that if anybody's in that situation, there are other people around you that are thinking the same things. And if you just have courage to reach out and talk to people and pray, you know, for God to bring those people into your life and those books into your life, that the Holy Spirit will drive you into the wilderness. It'll be hard. It'll be fucking hard. You know, it's like one of the worst things, losing your religion. It's like so painful. but you lose your religion to find your true faith, you know, and your true relationship with Jesus and God. And you're resurrected into a new life.
This is why Jesus hung out with the people he did, right? Is he spent 40 days in the wilderness by himself, dealing with his own shadow, his own demons, reemerges into society as this, like, I mean, he's pretty refined after that experience, right? Like,
yeah,
rabbi by everyone's understanding, like, where the hell did this guy come from? But also everything he's saying is, like, weirdly true, at least what I understand.
Yeah.
And he seems to be able to heal people, so I'm pretty interested in that. So, like, this person, of course, is spending time with the people who see straight through all the illusions of society, who see straight through all the systems, who no longer think that this whole man-made situation is the whole truth or is the purpose or the point of this human life. And the people who can do that are the ones who have been disregarded or spit out by the system.
Yes.
And that's, like you said, it's hell. It's not fun, but it does show us that life comes out of death.
And abundant life, you know, because abundant if you're life. Living in this place of feeling like as a woman, you feel called to be a preacher or teacher, but you can't because you're a woman. I mean, that's not living. That is just like you. I feel so suffocated just thinking about that, you know? And so yes, you're going to go through hell and it's going to suck. And you might even feel like, I felt suicidal when I felt like I was losing this religion I had grown up with. My whole world was shattered because religion was such an important part of my life. Yeah. And then I was at Westmont College and I was a freshman and I was in a doctrine class. And also we read the New Testament in biblical Greek, like we learned just enough to be able to read it. And that was when I learned that in the Greek language, in the early church, women were leaders of the church services. And yet when it was translated into English in the King James, women's names were changed to men's names.
Yeah.
And that was a thing that was sort of like the crack in the dike, you know, like that everything just sort of came crashing down after that because I believed that the Bible was an inerrant word of God. Okay, well, what about when there's translation and there's humans involved, you know? And so for me, that was the beginning of the end of the sort of fundamental conservative Christianity that I grew up with. And thank God. I mean, it was really hard. And I was suicidal. And that was also tied up with being raped and feeling like I was used goods and that nobody would want me, you know, and that my virginity was the most important thing about me and it had been taken from me. And I just, that was a really hard year being 18 and 19.
God, I can only imagine.
Yeah, that was awful. I mean, it was awful. And yet, and it was in that time too that I couldn't even walk into a church. I would feel sick. You know, it was just, there was too much damage. It was like so many negative messages were being revealed. I was so disillusioned, you know, which was really hard. And then after some time I was able to return to the church and receive healing there.
I thank you for sharing all of that. I remember that pain. I remember that ache of walking into a worship service and am I going to throw up or weep the whole time? It's really kind of a toss up at this point.
Exactly.
Was usually how I felt. And I mean, it was a gradual process for me to get used to being in a worship context again. Mm-hmm. I wonder what that was like for you. And I guess I'll also say before I hear you answer, for me, a big part of that process was grieving, was beginning to grieve. I mean, it's been years of grieving. A lot of what I would say is damage done to me and my psyche and my self-concept through that fundamentalist lens. But grieving, if I didn't grieve it, if I didn't name that it had hurt me the way that it had, if I hadn't let myself be vulnerable enough to say, this broke my heart, then I could have never stepped back into church. So I wonder what that process was like for you. How did you get from this heartbreak back into a place of healing and restoration?
That's so true, Heather. I spent a couple of years really exploring Buddhism, and I was in a sangha for a while with my boyfriend, and actually we met the Dalai Lama once, and
What?
yes, it was so it was so cool.
Would you like to tell that story?
Yeah, can I tell that story?
We'll get back to the other answer.
Okay. Well, we found out that the Dalai Lama was speaking at a college. I think it was UC Santa Cruz, and we drove there and hung out like in the walkway, and it was this beautiful walkway with breeze, California breeze, and he came walking by, and I was holding our son in my arms. My boyfriend and I had a son. I gave birth when I was 20. That's a whole nother story.
Put a
But
pin in it.
yeah. And the Dalai Lama came over to us and stopped and looked at Owen, at baby Owen, and touched his forehead and said, "This one's newly crossed over." Then he walked on. And it was just the most beautiful moment. And the thing was, I had read a book by him soon after that where he talks about if you grew up in a religious tradition, I encourage you to return to that tradition because that is the one that will have the most meaning for you.
That gives me chills.
Right? I love his non-competitiveness. I love his just the truth of that. It makes sense. Like the stories I've heard growing up my whole life, in the language and in the music, like all that stuff is deep in my psyche and it's just archetypal, for me. So,
Yeah, and how powerful that he showed up as the reminder of this when you were
yes.
at a meditation retreat. And he's like,
Yes.
he should probably go back to the
Yeah.
church.
Yeah. Totally. He's so
Wow.
wise in that way. And so I did. So I did. I started going back to church and I found an Episcopal church, and there was a lot of grieving. You're right. And healing in, like I said, the woman's voice, leading the service and preaching and teaching.
Yeah, can totally relate.
But you do have to name it. You have to go through the grief. It's
How?
like we were talking about with racism,
Yeah.
you can't just go right to reconciliation.
Yeah, exactly. The emotions are supposed to move through us and push us forward. I really believe that. And I'm working more and more on befriending my emotions and not just allowing them, but intentionally experiencing them. I had a couple days in a row where I was really angry last week, and I just decided, you know what? I'm angry today. Well, I should rephrase that because I think language is important around this, is if I can name it, if I can say, oh, I'm feeling angry, then I can just function in that space and I'm feeling angry and I know nothing that happens to me that makes me angry is personal and it has nothing to do with that other person trying to get in my way or whatever. I stop getting so combative and defensive because I can actually just say, oh, I'm just angry. That's just happening to me right now and I'm moving through it and it's not me. It doesn't define me. It doesn't define my day. And it doesn't mean anything about anything. It's just what's happening. And the sooner that I have been able to stop resisting emotions and name them and just move with them, then I think they actually do take us where we need to go.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. I want to learn what you're learning about anger
Yeah, anger is
because
hard for women.
it's so hard. It's so hard, and I've had a lot of it in my life, and I've
What are you
experienced a lot
angry
of
about? Tell me, tell me.
right now, like today.
Yeah.
I'm angry about racism. I'm angry about injustice. I'm angry about the fact that this country was built by slaves, and people of color have been intentionally discriminated against and killed, and families ripped apart, and men of color put in prison,
Yeah.
and I am angry about that.
Yeah. Why?
Why?
Yeah.
It's unjust. It's not right. It's not respecting the dignity of every human being. It's not seeing the image of God in a man of color walking down the street. If I see a man of color walking towards me on the street, I will intentionally turn my body towards him and smile and make eye contact and say hello.
Yeah, me too, man.
Isn't that
I do the same thing.
amazing? Yeah. And what's it like for you?
Well, sometimes I get in my head because I'm like, are you trying too hard, Heather?
Yeah,
Do you know what
totally.
I mean?
Yeah.
Because I also try to put myself in his shoes in that moment, and I'm like, okay, he could think, oh God, this woman is so afraid of me that she's trying to, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Reverse psychology this shit. But so I tone it back a little bit. I just usually like give him a wave and a smile.
Yeah, I try not to
It
be a
does feel
big
really good.
yeah, and for me,
Connected.
like I try not to be a big dork about it, but like, you know, make it as natural and cool as possible, which I struggle with anyway. I'm an awkward person, but to see the response of somebody like smiling and like their face lighting up and like just that human connection is so tangible and good. And it's just wrong that people of color have been like hunted and killed by police, and that little black and brown boys and girls grow up without protection. And it's not right. And we have to do better. We have to work to change it now.
Well, that's
And frankly, if your church is not doing something to work on racism and race issues, I want to know why not. Why the fuck not?
What are you holding on to?
Yeah.
I can only speculate, so it's probably best for me to not try to answer that question.
Yeah. What are you angry about?
Like I said, I think part of what I'm realizing is that my emotions don't typically have to be about something. A lot of days, it's just this is what I'm feeling. And if for me to try to trace it down to something in particular is not always productive, some days it's just like good for me to live in what's really naturally happening. But to answer your question, I'm very angry at about patriarchy. I'm very angry about like the subtle infusion of patriarchy into this culture. I'm on dating apps and it is the worst. I mean,
Really?
the whole concept of dating is just like a weird piece of this old norm that we've kind of held on to in a society that's also working hard towards being equitable and just. But the way that dating works, there are just very naturally roles and expectations that now people are not aware of. When they were systematized, people at least knew the role and the script. But now there really isn't one. Everyone has their own script, their own role, their own boxes they're trying to fill. They have something that they're looking for, but they don't know how to even say what they're looking for because most people don't know that they don't know what they're looking for. So I get really angry about the prospect of like finding a partner in life and having a mutually beneficial and uplifting and inspiring relationship,
This is why you need to be a lesbian. I'm just saying.
I know for the audience, I really do think about this all the time because there are just so many of my favorite people are lesbian or at least bisexual. And like,
Telling you, man.
I
No, I
know.
mean, I know there are wonderful men in the world, and you know, as the mother of a son, I am not at all a male basher. I'm not. I just think.
It's the system. I don't hate men. I really don't. I hate what has been handed to men. I hate that we don't have. I was just talking to a man about this the other day, that there just isn't a good paradigm for positive masculinity, healthy masculinity. We're doing a lot of, it was Jonah, our mutual friend. He was
Oh,
talking
yeah.
about like there's a lot of toxic masculinity talked about, but nobody's really taught given it a replacement. And so, he's a gay man, but he was saying, like, especially for straight men, like looking around
Yeah.
and like, what is my paradigm? What am I shooting for here? Just not getting accused of rape is the answer for a lot of them. Honestly,
That's a
honest to
low
God,
bar. That's a
it
low.
is. But also, like, I'm listening to these men that I go out with, And they're terrified of cancel culture. They're terrified and they're repressed because of it, because this is just like a trying to climb over each other situation where, like, no, you've been in power long enough. Now we're going to be in power. And that is not the way of Christ. And
Right.
so threatening one another with power and lawsuits and like who gets the control is not the answer. We have to work together. And until we have a paradigm for how that works, it's just going to be a shit show.
Yeah.
And I'm
And
angry about it.
yeah, I'm angry about it too. And it reminds me of that Dar Williams song, you know, where she's Dar Williams sings a song called I Was a Boy Too. And it's a wonderful song. You should go listen to it. But I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is that patriarchy harms men too.
Right.
It's hard for men, generally speaking, to be intimate with other men, you know, to experience and to share emotion and kindness and softness. And, you know, there's so many. What if you're a straight dude? Like, what is it? Harry Styles, a straight dude who loves to wear dresses? Like, that fucking rocks. That's awesome, you
Yeah,
know?
that is cool.
Yeah. And I wish there were more room in our culture for all different ways of being a man or a woman.
Right.
Everybody has masculinity and femininity in them.
Right.
Nobody owns that shit.
Of course, there is no definition of either of them. It's the same concept that we were talking about with white supremacy. Dismantling that theoretically looks like it's going to cost something for white people, but actually the cost is your own enslavement to the system,
Amen.
which is your salvation. This is your
Yes.
freedom. Dismantling the system is your freedom. You don't even realize how your life has been squashed by it. And it's the same thing with patriarchy, all of these systems of power. They're just sucking the life out of everyone. But and then I get really angry about this. And then I'm like, oh yeah, no, this is what it is to be a human. This is what the whole thing was about. Like it's not gonna get to a perfect ending. That's not the story. That's not how it goes. That's the new heaven and new earth.
That's the, for me, that's a gift of getting older is, you know, you asked how my grief had changed from maybe when I was 20 to now that I'm 40. And it's not that you accept all the shittiness of life, but it's like, it's the acceptance that you just expressed, you know, like that this is what it is to be human. And there's nothing actually wrong when you wake up and you feel angry or you feel sad or you feel depressed or you feel alone. That is just being human. And to
Nothing to
be
fix.
right, there's nothing wrong here. Like, what if there's nothing wrong? I'm so good at like getting all worked up and worried about this and that and things that haven't even happened and you know, but what if like yeah, you totaled your car and you got in a fight with your wife and your pets are angry at you 'cause you're not feeding them
Your
and
pets are
like
angry at you. You have cats, just
I
to
have
be
two cats and a
clear.
dog. I have a dog. They're all very needy sometimes, you know, but like, what if in that moment nothing is actually wrong? What if that moment is just an opportunity for you to be like, okay, I'm human. This is my experience right now. Oh, and that reminds me, just while you were talking about emotions, I want to share with you and everybody that I'm reading this great book called 90 Seconds to a Life You Love by Dr. Rosenberg. And it's like self-help. I love self-help books.
Me too.
She talks about how these eight difficult emotions, you know, and they're like disappointment and shame and embarrassment, you know, and that each emotion really only lasts 90 seconds. Like it can flood your system and you can feel completely laid out by shame for sure. For me, it's shame, like just on the floor, right? But you can ride it out and you can learn to ride it and not like react and not start telling yourself a story that makes the shame continue, you know, but you can ride it out and then take a deep breath and choose how you want to respond. I love that.
Because the emotion is only just this present moment. And then in the searching to make sense out of it, we attach a story to it. And then when we
Exactly.
attach the story to it, we keep it going.
Exactly. Those stories we tell ourselves. We gotta watch that.
And I'm such a meaning maker. Like I'm a why person. I want to know why and how everything is happening because probably I want to perfect it.
Analyze it and
I
perfect
want to get it
it.
right. I just want to
Yeah.
get it fucking right. That's all I want to do in life. I've never cussed as much on an episode as I have
Yay!
On this one.
Oh, I
So
love
thanks for
it.
bringing that up.
Anytime.
It's also been like this simmering anger that's doing it for
Yeah.
sure.
Good. Yeah. Anger is a sign that your boundaries have been crossed, and it's
Yeah.
a wonderful thing to have and a good thing to listen to, you know?
Yeah.
Our boundaries have been crossed by patriarchy. So we're angry about that. And anger is a gift. It lets us know when our boundaries have been crossed. And I think you and I were expressing that the patriarchy has crossed our fucking boundaries and we're
Right.
angry about it. And what we
Right.
can do about it is to have a podcast like Chick Monks where we talk about it, but also live it out in our lives by raising sons or nephews or neighbors' kids or, you know, modeling to people in our lives just a more self-aware, open-hearted, vulnerable way to be and to allow young boys to wear skirts or wear pink or play with dolls or, you know, express sadness or whatever. Like, it's all okay. Like, all that stuff will change the world.
And it's almost you like you don't want a kid to have an experience as an outsider or something. But also, there are ways to do that without it being super traumatic to open their minds. So traveling or going to a different part of the city where you're not super comfortable or you're not the majority. Thinking about those kinds of things, opening our minds and changing our experiences.
Yes, amen. I agree.
And I think another really important part about especially anger, but probably most of the difficult emotions, there's a temptation to blame, to find someone to blame. And I know I'm so quick to take it on myself, which just means any difficult emotion turns into shame because if I'm blaming myself, then I am feeling shame for what I'm experiencing. And they don't require blame to experience any of these emotions. Nobody has to be at fault for your feelings to be valid.
Wow.
And that it doesn't have to be directed to anybody. I don't have to be angry at anyone, but I can be angry that patriarchy is a thing. And that's super valid.
Yeah.
You
That's
know?
really wise. I love that. I myself have been working on quitting my blaming habit. I tend to externalize things when I'm uncomfortable. Like, who's responsible for this? Why am I feeling this
Right.
way?
Same.
Fuck you.
Yeah. Who hid my keys?
Why are these people sucking on purpose just to fuck with me?
Yeah, exactly. Your cats probably are, but nobody else.
Cats totally are. Cats are. They're little
Oh
shitty
my God.
fuckers.
Well, I think this has been really great and really fun and a lot of good content. How do you feel?
I feel like there's so much more I want to talk to you about,
I
Heather.
know.
Like, I really want to talk about a Christian sexual ethic with you sometime, you know?
Let's do it. Tell me what you think about it.
Oh, right now?
Why now?
Okay. I read a book called Just Love by Margaret Farley,
Me
and
too.
oh my God, what did you think?
I loved it. It was like a gateway for me into like, oh my God, I can safely explore and establish my own sexual ethic without feeling like a heretic. Because she's a
Yes.
sister, which I
She's a
think is really
sister.
helpful.
That's right. I just love that she talks about autonomy and relationality, and like those are the basis for all human relationships. She talks about doing no harm and vulnerability. And she talks about being an inspirited body. Yes, we're embodied spirits, but we're also inspirited bodies.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I love
What does
that, you
that mean
know?
to you?
Well, just that. You know, so I grew up with a real dichotomy between spiritual and physical, and spiritual was good and physical was bad, this dualism. And I feel like by talking about inspirited bodies, you're flipping that on its head. You know, you're not just saying we're embodied spirits, but something about our spirit is what gives form and shape to our bodies, you know, how we exist in the world. And I really believe that. And I think as women, part of the patriarchy is, you know, being taught to hate your body from a
Yeah.
very young age, and how we spend our entire lives just hating our body and being critical and spending money on products to try to change or fix our bodies to the point of like cutting our own flesh for no reason, you know, like unnecessary surgery in order to conform to some external standard of beauty. And mm-hmm. and then on our deathbeds, you know, we're like, oh shit, like our bodies are the things that mediate this world experience to my spirit. And I really need and love my body, and I'm going to miss this world, you know? Like, I don't want to get to my deathbed and have that be my experience. I want to start loving my body now.
That's good. And realizing my body is an irreplaceable part of me.
Yeah.
Because when this body isn't happening anymore, like, my time is up. This blip is over. You know?
That's right.
And that's right. It's just hard to comprehend that, I think. That impermanence, because I also do have this connection and transcendent practice of meditation and contemplative prayer, where I spend a lot of time attaching myself to eternal realities. And the embodiment piece is very easy for me to overlook. That's why yoga healed me so much. Having a practice of linking breath with movement and maintaining my focus in this present moment. I mean, these bodies are what attach us to the present moment. These are what attach us to time. Right. And so why are we at war with the way they move through time? Why do we deny aging? Why do we see it as problematic when our bodies cease to work as well? Why don't we just expect, you know, that time is going to work? I mean, it's in collaboration with our bodies, right? It's not against. It's not against us.
Yeah.
It's our time suit. Right.
The time suit. I like that. Oh, I like that so much. I know what you mean. And like the wisdom of what you're saying as you're speaking is so, it's so real for me. You know, I think about being 40 versus 30 versus 20 and just how different it feels, and how my mother-in-law died about a year ago, and we were lucky enough to have her present at home with us. Mm-hmm. And to walk with her through that journey. And I know you have also spent a lot of time with people who are dying in hospice care, and just to see the process of the body shutting down and to really be able to say all that needs to be said and to get to that point with her. And then when the body's taken away, to finally be ready for that. I mean, there is like some kind of beauty or truth or rightness to that completion, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you wanted to talk about sex, but now I want to talk about death.
I know. Oh my God. Well,
and that's the fourth quote that I wrote down from you is, I love talking about death.
It's like one of
the first things I ever heard you say.
Really?
Yes. But they're both obviously pretty inextricable, right? Like, Where life is formed and where life ends, and it's both so embodied, and it's both, it all belongs. Like, you cannot have the magic of birth and creation and sex and love and self-giving and self-emptying. You can't have that if there isn't the context of death and finitude.
Right.
And so when we export death to a sterile hospital professionalized context, and we take it out of the home, out of relationship, out of intimate family or relational context, then we've only done a disservice to our ability to enjoy the rest of life, right?
That's right.
And to grieve.
Yeah.
To tie it back into the earlier conversation.
Yeah. I do think that sex and death are inextricably connected, and you just explained it beautifully. Yeah. And I think the French call it a petite mort, like a little death when you have an orgasm.
Well, that's delightful.
Isn't it?
I mean, it's a surrender, right?
Yes. It's a surrender.
Yeah.
What if it feels as good to die as it does to orgasm?
I bet it does. I've heard some interviews with people who have, you know, like ER physicians and stuff, where they brought people back from the dead. Like, they have been clinically dead for seconds, minutes, some of them several minutes, and they bring them back because the resuscitation almost never works. And then I'll just tell the story. I heard an interview of this doctor. I'll link to it in the show notes, who was on the Rich Roll podcast. And he gives this, like, have you heard this? You're nodding.
I know Ritual. I haven't heard
Oh,
this
okay.
story, though.
Well, he gives this like 10-minute monologue about his encounter with death and the impact that it has on life. And so as this ER physician, he's talking about, during his residency, he's working one of these overnight horrible shifts. He's been working for like however many hours. And they attempt to resuscitate three different patients that night. And there's about a 94% success or failure rate with resuscitation. It's really rarely successful. And so in the same night, three patients have an experience where they're resuscitated and they look at them and the first thing they say is, "Why did you bring me back?"
Whoa,
Isn't
really?
that bonkers? One of them was a
Yes.
pastor. One of them was like a teenager, and I can't remember the third one, but yeah, I'll link to
Wow.
that interview.
That I've got to hear that. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it's so
Let's
good.
talk more in another conversation about death, please.
Yeah, we'll have embodiment part
Okay.
two. That sounds really good. Well, Hannah, I love you so much. You
I
are
love you too.
sincerely one of my favorite people, and you're like, when I think about this season of my life here in San Diego, you're one of the first faces that pops into my mind, and God, I couldn't be more grateful for you.
Gonna cry. I love you so much too, Heather. And I just think you came into our circle of friends like in this amazing way on the magical winds of Tennessee, and here you are.
Magical winds of the Smokies.
I'm so glad that you're here and that you're in this journey and that we get to walk together in this time. Thank
Oh,
you.
me too. In closing, tell us what is one spiritual practice that's bringing you life right now?
Definitely centering prayer,
Mm.
just sitting quietly with God. I like describing it how Henri Nouwen describes it, which is wasting time with God.
Beautiful. So beautiful. Yeah. And you don't have to justify it or feel like you're not being productive or there's more you need to be doing. Just being.
Just being, exactly. What about you?
Similarly, I actually had a moment this morning when I was sitting on my bed and didn't really feel like journaling, didn't really feel like reading, but was just like very physically at peace, sitting with my coffee, sitting with God, and like, oh yeah, this is it. This is how I want. This is homeostasis. This is where I want to be my reference point, for the rest of
Nice.
life. I'm like, yeah.
That is some good embodiment right there.
That's so good. Man.
Beautiful.
Well, I love you. I'm thankful for you. Thank you for doing this.
I love you too. Thanks for inviting me. I feel so special.
You are.